You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and welcome to the American Hour. And, of course, we are fortunate to be joined by our lovely co-host, Paula Lozon, tonight. Paula, how are you up in Boston?
Doing pretty good. It's 59 degrees and overcast here in the greater Boston metro area.
Okay, okay. Have you had any hot days, though, in the last couple weeks?
It was really nice this weekend. It was pushing high 70s in southeastern Massachusetts this weekend, where I sat on the beach for 2 days and pretty much cooked myself.
Excellent. That's always a good thing to do, yeah. Okay. Well, living in a beach town, we never go to the beach without umbrellas, and I don't even wear, you know, short-sleeve shirt anymore. I put a long-sleeve shirt on, an athletic shirt, and, man, I just can't get any more sun. I've spent my whole life in sunny, sunny places. But, very good. Now, we've got some exciting news. You know, we had a huge show, I guess it was 2 weeks ago maybe, our good friend Nick Taxia, the author and owner and publisher of Da Progressive. And I actually, Paula, just the week after we did that show, I had a layover in D.C., and it occurred to me, hey, that's where Nick lives. So we got together in Alexandria, Old Town in Alexandria, and had dinner and a really nice time.
He told me.
So it was quite nice. Well, anyways, he's agreed to do a recurring segment on the show.
And
it could be anything from just some political commentary or some of his stand-up humor or whatever it is. But he's going to get a segment, and we still haven't quite decided on – you know, how much time he's going to get. It's probably going to be flexible, but he's signed up for the next, well, not the next, but I believe the 7th, 14th, and then whatever come after that. So once a week during June for about the first 3 weeks. So I think that's going to be every Wednesday. It's either every Wednesday or Thursday, but we'll get that on the website and on Facebook. So that's exciting. We're really looking forward to that. And as the campaigning season really heats up here, we're going to start getting more candidates on the show just to, you know, promote their candidacy, et cetera. And that was always the plan all along. As we started getting into the summer months here where things get really hot, candidates are all looking to go on radio shows and get their message out there, et cetera. So we're going to start having more candidates, and we'll, again, post that stuff appropriately. Now, Paula, we're up to 6,500 followers on Twitter now.
Nice.
And it just keeps growing. I think by next week we'll hit 7,000. So we're doing good there. Facebook, I still haven't done any advertising, so we haven't gotten that far. But we're doing okay, but not compared to Twitter. Twitter's been fantastic. So we're going to keep working that, and one of these days I'll get around to doing some advertising on Facebook. But I want to throw a shout-out to the Titusville Patriots. Fantastic organization, and I was one of the first members. I'm still a member. I just don't live there anymore for a variety of reasons, but miss those guys. Wonderful group, and everybody up in Central Florida. But Titusville Patriots do some fantastic work in the Central Florida and Space Coast area, and we may have some of those folks listening tonight because their leader and steward, Don Forward, did a little promotional stuff for us for tonight, and in addition to all of our other promo stuff. So in any case, we appreciate their efforts. And we have got a really cool group of kids with us tonight. They're going to be joining us here in just about 20 seconds. We've got Mike, Miguel, Charlie, Artur, Peter, Kelly, Dan. I'm going to let them tell you how they got started and why they got started, but they are a group called SOS Liberty. They're all over social media. They've been going like gangbusters on Facebook. They're high school kids that are fed up with the government and where it's taking us and their futures. They're concerned about their futures, and they don't like what our generation is doing to them, and I don't blame them either. I don't like it either. So Without further ado, I guess we'll say that the ringleader may be Mike. Mike, you guys still there?
Yes, sir. How's it going?
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us all tonight. So somebody, I don't care who does, you run the show there on your end, and I should tell everybody, we've got one phone line with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 kids or possibly more, and but they have rigged up a sound system, microphone system, et cetera, and how kids are when it comes to electronics, way ahead of us. And they are going to do a roundtable from there on with one phone line. Of course, we have a phone line that anybody can call in, multiple callers. It's 310-982-4145 if you want to call in and talk to these kids. But whoever Mike wants to tell us, how did you guys get started? Why did you get started? And we'll go from there.
Yeah, this is Charlie Kirk here. I'm just going to give a little brief overview of our group and some of our goals and mission, our mission and our vision, where we've been and where we plan to be, and then I'll hand it off to Miguel, who's going to kind of do a oratory view about our group. SOS Liberty is a group comprised of high school and college students all across the country, headquartered in Northern Illinois. Our goal is to mobilize, educate, and train the youth of America to take action against Washington's reckless spending that is, in fact, bankrupting our generation, future generations to come. I have a wonderful team. My co-founder, Mike Diamond, and I kind of pioneered this 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, excuse me. And actually on Monday, we were featured on Fox and Friends on national television with over 1.2 million viewers.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've only got 1 million viewers, so they outdid us, but good job. Excellent.
And I actually personally had an article published for Breitbart.com, and I'm writing a piece for the Fox News op-ed section. We have a wonderful team at SOS Liberty. Our website, www.soliberty.com, has pictures, videos that are inspiring youth all across the country. And here's Miguel, who's going to go into kind of a oratory about our group with a little bit of pathos, ethos, and logos. And take it away, Miguel.
All right. Thanks for that introduction, Tony. First of all, I want to talk about our group, SOS Liberty, who we are, and essentially what SOS Liberty stands for. As many of you know, SOS stands for the International Distress Signal. And that's really what we try to symbolize, that we, as the youth, are sending out a distress signal because we essentially feel that we are drowning in an ocean of debt. And the problem is that we are letting Washington get away with massive overspending. And a lot of this is because of the youth, who are the worst off in this debt for entitlement trade-off, continue to stand by and do absolutely nothing about it. So because the youth aren't standing up to Washington about these multi-trillion dollar deficits, Congress takes it as implicit consent that we are okay with them literally spending our future away. So essentially, Washington and the people continue to kick the debt crisis underneath the carpet because they don't see it as the most major concern. Effectively, because kids are being spoon-fed Keynesian economics in schools and aren't being taught the real problems with stimulus, the real problems with crippling debts, and the real problems with manipulating the free market. And we are taught to value short-term economic growth over long-term economic prosperity. And we're also seeing a growing cultivation of entitlement in our culture, and kids our age are essentially being taught that a lot of the things that we had to work for before are things that the government is supposed to hand to us, that we are afforded the right to affordable health care, that we are afforded the right to education, that we are afforded the right to own a home. And our generation has changed the question. It's not how will I pay for these things, but rather who will pay. And the conservatives our age who stand up, they're effectively being taught that, you know, you don't care about the people or you have no sense of empathy, when in reality, it's this growing sense of entitlement that is eroding our empathy. And we effectively don't care about what our entitlements cost as long as we get our tuition or we get our Social Security, or as one of my friends like to put it, we get our free Obama money. We talk to kids my age and, you know, we talk to them about college and the future prospects, and talked about them, you know, why are you going to college? Why are you going to this school? You know, what are your ambitions for the future? And a lot of these responses are, oh, I'm going to college to party. I'm going there to drink. I'm going there to smoke. I'm going there to have a good time. And effectively, because they aren't being taught to invest into their own future, and because of these massive overspending programs, a lot of the kids our age are being taught to shirk their own sense of individual responsibility. And this is where we come out with the SOS solution. We want to reaffirm our values as a youth. We want to teach our peers free market principles, and we want to inspire the youth to take back our government. We want to show teens that America isn't about your opportunity to grab more entitlements, but rather your entitlement to keep them through opportunity and hard work alone. We want to combat a lot of the indoctrination we've seen in schools with bottom-up leadership. And effectively, we can see that they may monopolize the classroom, but that we can lead the way with social networking and peer-to-peer social events. We can even use a lot of these progressive tactics to promote our own message with community organizing and Saul Alinsky-style tactics. And we effectively just need to make the message clear. We can't afford it. We cannot afford wasteful government programs. We cannot afford multi-trillion-dollar deficits. We cannot afford any more stimulus. We cannot afford social justice, and most importantly, we cannot afford another 4 years of a president, Republican or Democrat, who continues to jeopardize the economic stability of our great nation. We have essentially just want to show our fellow millennials that it's cool to be fiscally conservative, and we want to show them that there are other young activists out there and say, hey, that I'm just like you. I'm scared too. We share the same views, and we are taking a stand for our generation, for our country, and for our future. Because here at SOS, we effectively believe that if we live above our means today, we will be forced to live substantially below our means tomorrow.
Miguel Melgar, everybody, he's up.
Oh boy, indeed.
We are very passionate here. We have kids all over the country, not only kids, but older Americans that are jumping onto our cause. We feel that it's especially relevant to us students for us to stand up for our generation's sake, to fight against big spending over entitlements and promises that we can't make. And we're not just fighting for this and for our generation, but we're fighting in the short term as well. We're fighting for the solvency of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, because in 2031, those programs are scheduled to be exhausted. We cannot pay for those programs as of then.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this real quickly here, let's do this first. Tell people where they can connect with you on all of the social media you've got, from Facebook to website to Twitter and on. Let everybody know how they can follow you and find out what's going on and get involved.
Awesome. Okay, so everybody on Twitter right now, we love the shout-outs. We're still trying to grow our Twitter. It's at LibertySOS. Give us a shout-out, retweet our stuff. It really helps us out. It helps spread our influence. Facebook is facebook.com/SOSLiberty. Again, every single like helps grow our cause. We have over 4,000 likes. We've reached over 2 million people through social media. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/TheSOSLiberty. And our website is www.sosliberty.com. Those are the 4 main ways that we communicate. We have hilarious videos on our YouTube channel. We tweet several times a day, and we post twice a day religiously on our Facebook page. On our Facebook page, you can find our Fox News interview with Fox and Friends. And actually, this Saturday morning, we'll be back on Fox and Friends at 8:20 Eastern Time. If all that you want to tune in, you can see SOS Liberty, Mike Diamond, Maria Kudakova, and I will be back. We'll be fighting a good fight out there. And yeah, just hand it back to you. Those are the social media. Again, it's at Liberty SOS, facebook.com/SOS Liberty, and SOSLiberty.com. I just saw new Twitter followers as I was saying that. So that's really, really exciting.
Awesome. Okay, well, now everybody knows if they go to my Facebook page, we've got the promo there for this show tonight, but also the link directly to your Facebook page. So if they don't want to complicate things at all and aren't as young as you guys and can remember all that stuff, but that is a great way to get started. Now, you said something a few minutes ago that I thought sounded really cool, using Alinsky tactics against the Marxists. That's not exactly what you said, but what kind of tactics, Alinsky tactics, do you think would be successful as conservatives to use against these lefties and libtards, as I call them, to fight fire with fire?
Well, I mean, obviously the media is not on our side. We have Fox News, and we have SOS Liberty Radio, and we have you and a couple other conservative radio stations. But other than that, you know, we're kind of on our own. We have to do grassroots activism, and I can see Miguel has something to say here.
I guess the biggest advantage that we have is that since we are the youth, we know what appeals to the youth. And that's something that we have that's really, you know, a significant edge. We make internet memes. We have T-shirts. We'll probably come out with bumper stickers soon. We know the exact types of things that are going to appeal to kids our age, and that's something that really no other political group can capitalize on.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the things like
humor.
Yeah, humor's good. Of course, you know, showing up at political rally for a liberal congressman or whatever and holding up signs to say, you know, you're stealing my future, you're not doing your job, those kind of things. But actually, when you get kids together that maybe aren't quite as conservative or on the fence, some of the Alinsky tactics that were used were quite deceptive, and I don't believe in using any of those. But on the other hand, you can lay out very clearly for them what the tactics are that the left is using that is deceptive to show them how they're being duped and how they're being fooled. And that's one of the best ways to kind of use Alinsky tactics without actually using them, but to highlight how the youth is being used by the left. Just like many other special interest groups and minorities, they're being used by the left. In any case, now, you guys talked a lot about fiscal responsibility, and I'm going to bring something up here in a minute, but I want you guys to respond to this. Have any of your parents, scoutmasters, track coaches, football coaches, anybody like that, any clubs you may belong, did they ever sit down and say, listen, this is a really important life lesson for life that I want you to understand, and that is you need to spend like there's no tomorrow, and don't worry about going into debt. That'll stimulate things and get you going in life, and that's the way you need to operate. Have any of your mentors, parents, et cetera, ever sat down and told you that's the way you run your life? Oh, they got cut off here. Hold on a second. Somehow you guys got put on hold. Okay, you guys heard all that, but I don't know why, but for some reason your mic just got cut off. You're back up. So have any of you been taught that by people, of my generation? And if not, then why does the government think that's the way to run things?
We actually got cut off there. If you could repeat the question, that'd be great.
Yeah, okay. Have your parents, scoutmaster, leaders, teachers, I'll forget the teachers here. We'll get to that in a minute. But anybody that you respected in life, grandfather, grandmother, ever sat down and said, hey, listen, we've got a really important message or something that you really need to understand about life, and that is you need to just gin up as much credit as you can and spend as much money as you can and live life as large as you can and live outside your means because that'll bring true happiness, and don't worry, we'll figure out something on down the road.
Absolutely not. No one in my family has taught that, and I think that, our kids in my generation today, they're being taught that, you know, credit is your best friend. And this is not the symbol that we need to be sending to our generation. They're being taught to go to schools that are beyond their means. And a lot of it is also because they have parents, you know, who bought houses that were beyond their means. And our country, I think that, you know, at the national scope, we're growing an even bigger culture that says that we need to be living a glamorous lifestyle, that we all need to be living as if we are in the top 1%, regardless of whether our paychecks can reflect that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, well, you know, and the real point is we don't live our lives that way. We can't live our lives that way, but we're being told that that's how the government operates most efficiently, and it's a lie. It's a scam, and it's all going to end up on your backs and probably even more so on your children's backs. I know that's a long way off for you guys, but that is really the biggest problem here, and the reason is the government feels it can do this and get away with this is they just think if they can just grow the next program and get a little bit bigger, then they can kind of take care of everybody. But the problem is there's more going into government than is coming out, and as government gets bigger, just gets – so here's something. I don't know if you guys have researched this. It's very hard to find these days. It used to be a lot easier to find. But one of those pie charts that shows where all the budget money goes. And President Obama's latest budget proposal, which got no votes in the House or the Senate, and they say, oh, but it was parliamentary trickery, yeah, but whatever. The bottom line is it got no votes. In his budget, for the first time ever, he has proposed an executive branch that will be bigger than Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid combined, $1.4 trillion in size. And yet, you guys probably have noticed that you're always seeing politicians talk about how, well, we got to tighten our belts and figure out a way to solve Social Security and solve, you know, Medicare. But the executive branch is bigger than both of those combined, more than twice the size of the military. Why is it that we're always cutting the military and trying to cut, you know, entitlements to seniors? And, yes, that's a problem to seniors and Medicare, but we never, ever talk about cutting the size of the federal or the executive branch, which the president, the bigger it gets, the more control he has. And if you read the Constitution, he has very little power whatsoever, very little. And that's why presidents want the executive branch to get bigger and bigger, because it gives them more power. And I think if you haven't done that already, you tell your friends, why is the executive branch of the federal government more important than you? Why must it grow, but you tighten your belt? Because they're greedy, and they're lying to you, and they want power. And that's really what is destroying our country. I know you guys are conservative, and I'm sure you've looked at not only the Constitution but the founding of our country to understand that the federal government was supposed to have a limited role. So it's like building a structure, a home or a building that is designed to support so much weight, and that's it. The states, on the other hand, were supposed to handle, according to James Madison, who wrote the Constitution, all civil and social matters. But now we've got the federal government trying to handle all those, and it's on a structure that was never designed to support that. And that's why they keep failing at everything they do. Every time they come up with a new program, whether it's Obamacare and Social Security and low-income housing or whatever it is, the states were supposed to handle all that stuff. And so that's why they will always fail. So every time you walk into a room of this structure and too many programs get lined up there, the floor breaks through, and you come crashing down, and now we've got to repair the floor and figure out how to solve the problem. Oh, let's add a few more agencies. And that's really what's going on with our government beginning to implode upon itself. And it's sort of like a self-feeding thing. You know, if you've ever had some hot sauce that was really hot, and now your mouth is starting to burn. Well, if you keep feeding the hot sauce and faster, it'll stop burning. But eventually, you got to pay a price. And you guys, unfortunately, are going to pay that price. So my next question is, how do the majority of your peers in high school feel about this stuff? Do they even care? Or, you know, do they feel differently, or do they feel like you? What kind of percentages would you say feel like you versus don't care versus have a different feeling?
This is Dan here. It's going to be hard to put any exact percentage on anything, but I think the majority of people fall into either disinterested or unknowledgeable about it, meaning they either have no desire to learn anything about it, or they just don't because they don't think they can do anything about it. And there is a small group that does have interest in it, and some of them do fall on the liberal side, but we respect their concern, and I think where we really see a role for SOS Liberty is to take the liberals, make them see our side a little more, and take some of the disinterested people or the people who don't think they can do anything about it and bring them in, get them interested, get them active.
Hi, Peter here. I have one more thing to add to this. I go to a high school that's coterminous with Mutual Township's boundaries, and Mutual Township voted in the 50% for President Obama's 2008 and gave 55% to John Kerry, somewhere around there. And I will say that the student body at my school is fairly liberal. However, and in mock elections in 2008, President Obama got about two-thirds of the student body support, maybe about 70%. But I will say that I take AP government, and my class has 16 kids in the class. 12 of them are outspoken conservatives. I will say that the people who actually care about the issues at this point in high school and at this point in life are the conservatives, because they're the ones who see government as a limiting factor and see government as something that's getting way out of control and that will bankrupt our generation and the next generation and a generation after that. And however many generations you can think of until the government just can't spend any money. So I would say that the conservatives who believe in fiscal restraint actually do care more than the generally apolitical liberals.
Well, I think that's a good sign, because I think that's true about all generations right now. Those of us that understand the Constitution and understand the role of the federal government are very disturbed and concerned, and we are very likely to all go out and vote, whereas I think our liberal brethren, they're not fired up about anything other than, you know, they want to see Obama get reelected. Great. But I think we're going to see massive numbers of conservatives and independents that are concerned, just like you are, showing up to vote. And it's going to be very hard for him to rally his base. He's trying to use all of these minor issue tactics to fire up his base, which isn't really going to do it because everybody is concerned about the economy and about the national debt. Even liberals are concerned about it, but they don't have any answers, and so they're not as fired up about it. They don't have a leader any longer who's got them fired up because you can't talk platitudes anymore. He's had an opportunity to make some difference. Platitudes aren't going to cut it. He's got to have some details and specifics and a plan, and yet we've watched him for 3.5 years. I'm sure you guys have been watching this. He's always got a plan, and then nothing ever happens. He's always got him focused like a laser beam. I will not rest until blah, 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 and then he never does anything. So, Paula, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask?
No, right now, no, Tom. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Well, okay, so what do you folks think as high school students, and, you know, you've been paying attention. I think anybody that pays attention can have some good ideas. Sometimes it helps if you've been around a long time like me, but what kind of ideas do you think will help get this country back on track fiscally and get our debt under control?
Well, this is Charlie here. We're very, very solution-oriented, and we use our Facebook page, facebook.com/SOSLiberty, or website, www.slsliberty.com. You will see the solution. Some of them include term limits, tying congressional pay to presenting a budget. The Senate has not proposed a budget in 3 years. The president has proposed a budget that never balances. I also believe that if health care can be bought across state lines, that it will lower the cost of health care and raise the quality. Additionally, the best medicine to a big debt is a healthy economy. But we have too much regulation, over-litigation, and a tax code that is not favorable to small business and entrepreneurs that want to get businesses started, create jobs, and it will increase revenue to federal government. We will not be able to tackle this debt in the long run. We need to be able to get a healthy economy, and the only way to do that is a pro-business environment, a pro-business tax code, and interest rates that are favorable for long-term economic growth, not creating bubbles that will end up getting us into a longer fiscal crisis.
And Peter here again. Charlie missed one big thing, and that's a balanced budget amendment. And I know that a lot of us members of SOS Liberty believe in a balanced budget amendment. I was lucky enough to serve at the U.S. Senate page this summer, and I got to know quite a few members of the Senate, had conversations with them. And the one who I found to be the absolutely brightest and the most promising was the freshman senator from Utah named Mike Lee. Senator Lee is the biggest supporter of the balanced budget amendment, and I'd actually recommend reading his book, The Freedom Agenda, which is all about the balanced budget amendment and its importance in restoring our future and ensuring a future for our kids and our grandkids. And I believe that we should be looking to pass some sort of balanced budget amendment. Remember, in the mid-1990s, a balanced budget amendment only passed, fell short by one vote in the Senate, and I believe that we need to have it happen again today.
I agree with that 110%. The biggest thing we need is a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. But I also think that we need to look at a lot of these entitlement programs, you know, specifically Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. The first thing that we need to do is we need to really look at these programs with a microscope and eliminate a lot of the fraud that's happening in a lot of these programs. Second of all, with a lot of these spending levels for these programs, they are not solvent. As Charlie talked about before, the Social Security program is expected to run out of money after 2030. And the thing is that us at SOS Liberty, we don't believe in cuts to try and eliminate these programs. We believe that cuts are necessary to save these programs. And we think that there needs to be a lot of reform in the fundamental structures of Social Security, especially, to make sure that it's not only available for the generations that we already have unfunded liabilities for, but for my generation and my kids' generation and the generations that they produce after that.
Again, the solutions that we just propose is more than one politician will say in a year. We're very solution-oriented and we're very passionate. And again, if you visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/SOSLiberty, and you like our page, you will see those solutions posted twice a day. We tackle the issue, not just by exposing what it is, with specific solutions. And again, how Miguel says it's a balanced budget amendment, and really the main drivers are our debt is entitlement, because it's a variable cost. As the workforce gets older and there's less people supporting the elderly, we will go farther and farther in the debt because of that. And we need to tackle entitlements, become common sense reforms such as what Miguel and I talk about very often is that having the Social Security age be consistent with life expectancy. Therefore, if life expectancy gets higher, the Social Security age automatically increases incrementally. And there's a formula for that that a very bright economist created. Therefore, we never will have to raise the Social Security age again. We don't have to go through this political nightmare that we have in Washington today.
Yeah, and you know, there are a lot of solutions. You know, Chile quite some years ago, I think in the 70s, privatized very rapidly, and they don't have the kind of population that we do, but very rapidly their Social Security system, because it basically went bankrupt, and they were able to do it. And the big problem people have with privatizing a program like that is, well, when the market has a big downturn, well, you know, when the market has a big downturn, it hurts the contribution to Social Security as well. And we've got a, as you said, a unsustainable program. So yeah, that's the unsustainable is no solution whatsoever. So we've got to think outside the box and come up with some other ways of solving these entitlement programs, which really, quite honestly, I believe they are all unconstitutional. Now, we have people to count on. So you guys have said the right thing. We can't just suddenly make them go away, but they need to be reformed. Now, as far as, you know, say, national security, and what you see going on with this administration, where do you think changes need to be made there in terms of national security so that we can be, one, fiscally responsible, but also secure?
National security is a tough animal, but here's what I say whenever we get that question. I say every single department needs to go under scrutiny, just like the Department of Agriculture, the Department of the Treasury. There's not one department that should be exempt from cuts or reevaluation of where our tax dollars are going. But in the end of the day, it's still our money they're spending. And again, it's the tenet of federalism that we need to look back on and what the Constitution really believes in. And there is waste in every single department, especially the Department of Defense. The defense is very, very essential to our needs to defend our liberties that we treasure every day. And in addition to reforming entitlements, we need to look at defense the way that we can use our money more wisely, because it's our money they're spending away and they're borrowing for.
And we also believe that we should probably audit the Federal Reserve to get greater incentives to what they are doing with their monetary policy.
Yeah. Yeah, the Federal Reserve, oh boy, that's a massive can of worms, I'm sure. So, well, I agree with you. One of the fuel roles that the federal government really has is the military and maintaining national security and protecting the states. So, but it's always an easy target for cuts. And, you know, one of my beliefs is the reason it's always so easy is because the people in the military aren't unionized. So they're not really a special interest group that can be involved in the whole voting and, you know, getting the message out, et cetera. They're just kind of there and they do their job. So they're an easy target. I was in the military, the Navy, for 22 years, so I know about a lot of waste there, because any government program is going to be full of waste. So really the key is to minimize the amount of federal government we have. It's got to get scaled way, 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 way back. It's just much too big, and I think that's a big point that you guys have made. I was looking at an article in American Thinker today by Stella Paul, and she starts off by talking about a friend of hers that she just was talking the phone on, and she was crying and saying that her only son is moving to China to find a job because you can't find one here, but there are job opportunities there. And then another friend she ran into at the supermarket the next day, her son is going off to Hong Kong because he's got a job opportunity there and he can't find a job here. And it's sad when people coming out of college can't find jobs because we've got an irresponsible government that would like to absorb more private sector money, and that the private sector is afraid to invest, and so the economy stays down. If you go back and study the history of the Great Depression, FDR, with very similar types of policies, created a depression within a depression. And we're on the verge of creating a recession within a recession under this president, because he's moving along just as FDR did, and that depression lasted, you know, a good full 10 years, and he imposed things that the Supreme Court eventually ruled, deemed to be unconstitutional, one of which was price controls, price fixing on goods and services, because that would, you know, help keep things under control and get the economy going. Those kind of things failed, just like taking over health care and then setting price controls, et cetera. It will destroy the free market, and we'll have a government system that's incapable of handling the load, and it will drive people out of the country. So he's following the footsteps of FDR here. But I just wanted to see what your comments are. I mean, I know you're looking at college and whatever else you may be wanting to do, military or just going straight into a family business, et cetera. But do you see this as a problem from your young perspective, friends that might be a little bit older, et cetera, really having a hard time finding a suitable job or suitable career to go after?
Well, first off, I just want to thank you for your service. I didn't know you were in the Navy, but we really, really appreciate the fact that you know, our soldiers are fighting for the freedom so we can have this conversation right now. But in reference to your question, yes, absolutely. I'm having trouble finding a summer job, as are many of the people sitting around this table. And much of that is, you know, because we are not creating a pro-business environment. We are creating an environment where businesses find it, you know, more beneficial to pack up and leave to China and Hong Kong, like you had mentioned before.
Yeah, I want to go into entrepreneurship, and that's kind of discouraged right now by the current administration. The amount of regulation, taxes that I have to go through just to become an entrepreneur and start a business is absolutely ridiculous. And with the newest passage of Obamacare, for me to become successful once I get over 50 employees, I get punished by the federal government. No tax code, no bill should ever punish growth, should ever punish prosperity. We need a pro-business agenda so that me, when I go into the entrepreneurial field and I want to start a business, I want a government that says, you know what, we're going to help you with that by giving you the freedom in the economy to be able to create jobs and find a way to get this economy going. And entrepreneurs are modern-day heroes, and because of that, in the greatest times of economic growth in our country, entrepreneurs are allowed to invest, risk their capital in the marketplace, and succeed.
Yeah. Oh, amen.
I was going to say, I actually did not have a problem finding a job. I worked for AMC Theaters, Randhurst 12. However, this week we were actually just bought out by a Chinese company. I believe it was a $1.2 billion deal. It was the largest Chinese takeover of any other private business in history.
Wow.
So we can see that a lot of the American jobs that are here, they're essentially becoming funded by the Chinese. That even though we might not be moving a lot of our jobs over to China, that a lot of the private firms that we have in the United States today are, you know, they're facing Chinese takeovers.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be a problem. You know, we don't have to export all our jobs to China. We just have to become part of China, a wing of China. And then we'll have plenty of jobs, but at China labor rates. That'll be great for everybody. Paula just texted me something that her son just finished reading a book called Strategic Vision by is a big new, I don't remember how to pronounce his name, Brzezinski.
Right.
And he mentioned the power shifting from the West to the East. Absolutely. I know it as a military guy. It's going that way. We've shut down the national security apparatus of NASA. Yes, we're privatizing it, and we just had a rocket launch. That's a great thing. But it's a national security asset. In other words, they were involved in things at NASA that we don't know about. And I'll give you a prime example. China right now is working on offensive and defensive space technology. And, again, as a career military guy, I can tell you this, that warfare has progressed from throwing a stick or a rock to a spear to arrows to guns to cannons to what we have today. We'll ignore the nuclear aspect of ICBMs, but power projection, naval air power projection. We can go anywhere in the world and control the airspace. But if one day somebody is able to control Earth's lower atmosphere and space, our naval power projection will become meaningless. And that's what they're working on, and we're not. And so we have a massive failure at the federal level to do one of the few things that we are specifically supposed to be doing. As the president in his latest budget proposal asked for a plus-up, a 12% plus-up of the Department of Energy, and yet we're scaling back on NASA. This is just ridiculous. I mean, this is suicide. And we're going to get what we're asking for if we don't stop it. So I'm glad you guys are working this angle. We've got some more questions for you. I'm going to take a moment here to do a commercial break, a one-minute commercial break. We'll come back, and we'll talk some more about fiscal responsibility and some of your ideas and where you're seeing the current government failing us. We'll be right back, everybody. National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida.
Their mission is clearly defined: to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida. And they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field, searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
And on that note, Paula, the NVHS has just gotten a very large grant. I'm not going to talk about how much. It doesn't matter, but it's significant enough that the NVHS is now expanding their operations throughout all of Florida, not just Central Florida any longer, but all of Florida, thanks to our state legislature listening to our veterans and finally agreeing. They had actually put something in a previous bill, but the governor, the line item veto, took it out, and he just didn't really understand what it was. Once we helped educate him a little bit, he was willing to sign it, and I believe it might even be a standalone bill. I don't remember specifically, but the NVHS is now a statewide organization, and they do some great work for us. It looks like our SOS Liberty folks just dropped off again. So, Paula, when they call back in, we'll get them back online here. But for the moment, and I don't have a callback number. I'd call them back, but they came up as unknown. Ooh, so couldn't see their caller ID. In any case, one of the things that I want to talk about, since we have a moment here, as I talked about how we plus up the Department of Energy and yet we're scaling back on NASA, I ask people all the time, what has the Department of Energy done for us? What have they done in a two-year period that has made a significant difference on energy bills for American citizens? And, okay, so we've got them back. It looks like you guys dropped off one more time, but we got you back. I want to throw one thing out here, and this is a thinking out of the box kind of a thing, and I came up with this. It'll never happen. I mean, not to say it never happened, but I came up with this a couple years ago because I ran into a couple different owners or principals of some solar panel companies in Florida. So at different times, so I didn't talk to them together, I said to them, how many homes for $25 billion, I know it's a lot of money, but how many homes in Florida could you put quality, top quality solar panels on those homes, and what kind of savings would those homes see? And the number they came up with, which is my own assessment I'd come up with, was 1 million homes. Now, here's the kicker. Those 1 million homes might be saving between 60 and 75% on their electric bill, but those savings, that huge a savings and lack of using normal standard electricity, would drive the cost of electricity down for all Floridians in the entire state, guess what, 45%. So it sounds like it would be a good investment. Well, if you took all the money at the Department of Energy in its annual budget and you did that, you would produce more jobs at an astronomical level and more energy savings and moving in the direction that the libtards want to move in, this green energy movement, in 2 years' time than the Department of Energy has done in its entire career since, I believe, 1972 when Jimmy Carter asked to put them there. They don't do a thing for us. So there's one way of thinking outside the box, how we can take money that's there but is being wasted and squandered and actually make a difference for the future. So that, maybe you guys have come up with some ideas like that too. Is there any particular department in the executive branch that you feel is a complete waste of taxpayer money?
Well, one of the easy departments to cut would be education. So now all of those expenses could be picked up by the state, and a lot of the states are underachieving in their education anyway. Massachusetts, which achieves the highest scores on the SAT, is still underperforming many European countries, and we spend more on education than they do. So the problem isn't how much we're funding education. The problem is the way we're doing our education system. And so in the process of cutting the spending, we could reform the education system, and now let's tell you how to do that.
Right, and I also did a project in my one class called Inquiry, Purpose, and Global Citizenship about the education in America. And the problem is with the public sector union. It's blocking any type of change helping that would help the public schools. What we need to do is take them out because they're the middlemen, and so we can actually reform our schools.
One more thing to add to this, Peter, again, is that unions are a big roadblock in terms of fixing our schools. In Chicago, where the schools are absolutely failing, one thing I looked at it, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, I'm doing is trying to push for a longer school year. He has supported this in the past. And one reason European schools are doing so much better is because they have a longer year. They also have longer school days. And teachers unions in Chicago have absolutely been completely opposed to this. Teachers have a pretty sweet gig. They work half of the days of the year. They get every weekend off. They get summer break off. They get every holiday off. They work from, say, 8 to 4. And the fact that they're not willing to expand their hours, maybe one more hour a day and then maybe two more weeks a year for the better education of kids in failing schools, it doesn't mean that to be for all schools, just failing schools, is astounding to me. And this just shows that we need to curb the power of teachers' unions everywhere across America.
If you really want to bring down the level of spending in the Department of Education, we need to have massive improvements to the education system so that they don't require so much capital. You do that through two ways. First, you increase school competition, and second, you increase school specialization. The way that you can do that is through, you know, private sector school voucher programs so that kids will actually get the choice of where they want to attend a school. Just like when kids go off to college and they get to apply to thousands of different universities across the country, you know, even if it was at the state level or at the local municipality level, if they had more choice about where they could attend middle school or where they could attend high school, it would not only make schools more competitive so that they would gain more applicants, it would lead to more school specialization. For example, the school where I used to attend, Buffalo Grove, I'd say that we had really good music programs and we also had really good engineering programs. However, you know, you go across the street and you go to Wheeling, for example. Wheeling, they had a very good music program in the context of band, learning how to play a trumpet or saxophone or learning instruments, whereas we were more, music theory and more, vocal performance. And it causes a lot of schools to specialize the programs that they're the best at performing at. And when you allow schools to really specialize and to cater to prospective students based off of what the students want to be trained in, you don't need a bunch of capital to do that, but you're drawing the applicants based off of the environment in which they're going to succeed the best in, bringing costs down, specializing the school system so that kids can acquire the skills that they need to succeed not only in college but in the job field as well.
Kelly here again, and also another really positive thing for public schools is charter schools as another option to the public school because it increases competition and it gives another option for parents who can't afford, say, a private school or going to boarding school is a really good option for low-income families.
Yeah, I know people in Central Florida that have kids in charter schools and they love them. And the left will try and demonize charter schools, but charter schools are working, they're effective. And the main thing is the parents are happy with it and the parents are involved, whereas in a lot of public schools they're not. So, you know, you may not be aware of this, but in Florida, we just had to lower our test scores for reading so that kids could pass and move on to the next grade when they take the FCAT, and they're not passing. So they had to lower the score requirements. In other words, we're not going to help you learn more. We're not going to help you read better. We're just going to make it so easier for you to pass at a lower skill level. That's the solution. Wow.
And one thing to add to that is that liberals will use an opposition to charter schools as a way to score cheap political points, but this is somewhere where conservatives could actually make inroads in urban areas and with minority populations because minority populations often are overrepresented at charter schools because urban areas tend to have more minorities and they tend to have worse schools. And so long as the Democrats attack the schools that are actually improving their children's education, or the liberals, I'm sorry, this is somewhere where conservatives, especially fiscal conservatives, could really make an impact and try to expand our message.
Yeah. Well, now let me ask you, I know that, you know, Chicago can be a liberal kind of a place, and you've mentioned that. You probably saw the recent or heard the recent video of the kid arguing with the teacher about politics and the teacher being very unreasonable and then even using some very poor language. Have you run into that in any of your social studies classes or et cetera of activist teachers trying to spew their baloney to the kids?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, personally, me, I do identify myself as a moderate, but if I really had to put a label on my ideology, I would actually say that I do lean left. But I'm an independent thinker, and I think that a lot of my teachers, conservative and liberal alike, have questioned that. There was one liberal teacher specifically. She was teaching communist theory, and she gave the vocab definitions, and she defined proletariat as the upper class and bourgeoisie as the lower class. And I've read a communist manifesto. I've read a lot of Marx's work. And I knew that, you know, these definitions were wrong, so I challenged her on it. And there was not only as far as spin went, but they were just they didn't even really know what they were teaching. And when I, at my own time, you know, because I read everything on the political spectrum, I'll read the communist literature, and then right after that, I'll go and read, you know, Adam Smith's A Wealth of Nations. And I try to make sure that I expose myself to, you know, as much literature of varying interpretations as possible to maximize my own education. But I find that a lot of teachers, they're just more focused on pushing their own ideology that they don't even go and bother and learn what they're teaching in the first place.
Hi, Kelly here. And I personally go to a very liberal school, and many, if not all, the teachers are liberal, and one is so far left that I would almost consider him socialist. And he... 2 years ago, he showed an inconvenient truth in my history class and proclaimed it fact. And then I personally told him afterwards in front of the entire class that that movie was disproved by many scientists afterwards. And many of my classes, I have to choose between my grades and my political views, because if you say something else, then they just will lower your grade. And so I've literally come into that throughout all my years in my history class, and it's just hard.
Peter here to add one more thing. I will say that I've had three liberal teachers, history and social studies teachers in high school, who I've become very close with, freshman year, junior, and senior year. I even student teach for my junior history teacher as a program at my school. And I believe that liberal teachers, conservative teachers, can teach an unbiased, fair classroom. And I've been, I've had a great experience to grow in my own political ideology through debating these liberal teachers outside of the classroom. But I did have a teacher in eighth grade who the year before had openly endorsed President Obama for the Democratic nomination to kids. And even in the best of schools, I attend New Trier High School, which is often called one of the best schools in Illinois, if not the best school in Illinois. And this kind of garbage happens in the junior high schools and even at New Trier. And I just find that to be completely ridiculous, and we really need to stop teachers from proselytizing their beliefs.
It's a big problem, but this is how we solve it. We make the classrooms twice as big, and we have two teachers. You find the teacher who is on the left and is going to teach a lot of the liberal policies and a lot of, you know, the liberal interpretation of history and of economics and whatever the course is to the best of their ability. And then you also find a conservative teacher who's going to teach the right side. They're going to teach the right-leaning interpretation of history. And you have them alternate lectures day to day. You have that, and you produce a learning environment in which case they're getting the interpretations from both sides of the spectrum. And you no longer have teachers teaching you what to think. But instead, you're being taught to develop critical thinking, and they'd be encouraging the development of higher order skill sets. So instead of being taught what to think, you're being taught how to think, and you're allowed to take what you want from the class and to form your own opinions.
Miguel,
go ahead.
All right. I was going to say, Miguel, it's a very interesting point, but I'd just like to bring up another fairly shocking fact that we like to share. New York op-ed columnist Paul Krugman writes our economics textbook, and this, if anything, is truly exemplary of the kind of liberalism that is being spoon-fed to students, as I believe Charlie mentioned before. But I mean, the whole premise of school should not be to push, you know, one-sided agendas. It should be to present both sides and, you know, let the kids decide. And that was how I was raised in my house. My father was, you know, always very open with his political beliefs, but, you know, he always said, you know, I may not be right. There's no right answer. You know, you should certainly develop your own opinions. And in my opinion, the schooling system, there's a fundamental, there's something fundamentally wrong in the fact that they are pushing these agendas so blatantly.
I have one more thing to add. This is Peter again. Again, my public school is one of the best in the state, if not in the Midwest. And one problem we have is a very liberal administration. For example, in Winnetka, Illinois, which is the town I live in, there was a push for affordable housing by a bunch of do-gooder liberals, and lots of backlash against this in the town. And it looks like affordable housing will not happen. But the school had an assembly because our grade has a Habitat for Humanity house that we sponsored, and that was a great success. But towards the end of the year, we had an assembly in which the school talked about the Habitat for Humanity house for 5 minutes, and then spent the next 20 minutes in front of an all-grade mandatory assembly, extending a liberal history teacher who is a self-described socialist up to the podium to speak about the necessity of government-sponsored affordable housing. How wonderful these programs are, and even insinuated that opposing these programs is somehow racist, although he did not directly say that. And hearing the teacher go up and spread about his opinion about how necessary these awful programs are was really disturbing. And the fact that he didn't face any sort of reprimand, the school actually encouraged him to do this, was disturbing.
Well, you guys ever go to like the principal or the board of the school board, et cetera, and say, hey, every time we have one of these assemblies, we get one point of view. Where's the opposing view? We want to have an opposing view.
Well, unfortunately, most of the people on the school board, and especially the principals, are on the left. So it's pretty much fighting a losing battle.
No, I understand. They can all be lefties, but just say, isn't this America? And can't we have an opposing view? Or are you going to force your opinions on us? That's not freedom. That's not liberty. So are you telling us that the Constitution doesn't matter anymore and that we broke away from Great Britain because we just wanted to form another form of dictatorship or monarchy? Are we going to have opposing views? I mean, just kind of make them uncomfortable about it. And see what they say, you know? And then, you know, the other thing you could do is, I think quite honestly, even if kids are ambivalent, or you can always start a petition. I know this takes time, and I'm not suggesting you actually do it, but you can always run a petition and say, and go around to fellow kids and say, hey, listen, don't you think it's fair to have an opposing view? Or should we always hear the left view at these rallies and such? And I think most kids would say, yeah, no, it ought to be fair and balanced. And, you know, do a petition drive and see what you can come up with that. But, you know, that's only if you have the time. I know your kids are probably awfully busy with a lot of stuff.
I'm sorry, Tom. It's Jacob, Paula's son. The only problem with that is some kids are either too afraid to care. Some of them just don't care about these views. And the only thing is that these school systems, the people running them, are using their power. They could care less what we think sometimes with these assemblies. And they're using their power, and they're just flinging it around, and they could care less what we think, sadly, even though it's against the Constitution. And as though a petition is a really good idea, some kids could just care less about these things, and they see this assembly as the way to skip school. So.
Well, you know, you're right. Yeah, you're probably absolutely right about that. But when you are talking with some kids that might be on the fence, this is something you can use to show them how their teachers here really don't care about them. They just care about their view and imposing it on everybody else. And is that right? You know, what if it were a very conservative school, et cetera, and some kids said, hey, we'd like to give an opposing view? I'd say, sure, go ahead. You know, we want to hear all the views. And it sounds like you kids are open to all of those things. But that's the problem with liberals. They have an agenda, and they don't care what anybody else has to say. They're going to force it upon you because they don't believe in liberty and freedom. They don't like liberty and freedom. They want to have power to make you do things because they'll make things better for you, just like any king or dictator believes. Muammar Gaddafi believed that if he was in absolute control and in charge of everything, like Saddam Hussein as well and Fidel Castro, then he'd make everything good for everybody. and it doesn't work that way. It never works that way. I'm sure you kids have read the Communist Manifesto, Soviet Constitution. I love taking that thing out and showing it to people and going, look at this wonderful utopian society and all of their guaranteed rights. I mean, this must be utopia on earth. Do you know where this country is? And they never know. And then you say, well, it's the old Soviet Union. It didn't work out so good, did it? You can have a constitution guaranteeing all this stuff, but if you have people in power that aren't willing to follow it, then it doesn't work. And, of course, we know that that kind of utopian society will never work anyways. But now Paula's got a son. Paula, introduce your son and what grade he's in, and he has something he wanted to throw out to us.
My son Jacob is finishing off his 10th year at the Volk School in Canton, and I think he just briefly had something to say about Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski's most recent book, Strategic Vision, that my son had asked to read. He sits with me in the morning to read Morning Joe, and he had something brief he just wanted to throw out there about that book.
Sure.
Hi, Tom. It's Jacob. I just want to say I read his book, Dr. Brzezinski's book. I thought it was a good book, and it did explain several things. One of these things being what would happen with Russia beyond 2025. It was one of the chapters. As America goes into more depression, the power, as you said earlier, people are not finding jobs here, and they're going to China, Hong Kong, and it's not doing anything because they do not have jobs here. And as power is growing from west to east, countries are going to become more dominant, China, India, Japan, Russia, and Russia is going to try to become more militarily powerful, trying to show their dominance. China, as economically okay as they're doing, will try to do the same thing. So as power moves, these countries are going to become more, I want to say, power hungry. They're going to want to show their power to the rest of the world, and they're going to become, it could be a little scary. They could try to show their power, they'll do certain things, and it could lead to something worse, something very bad. So they could become more dominant, and it couldn't be good for the rest of us, because Russia will try to pull countries such as Ukraine back, and that could lead to something else as they grow more power hungry. So
One of the reasons Russia does not want us to have any kind of missile shield in Europe, even though it's completely defensive, it's because they want to be able to intimidate us on down the road with their military power. And China's sea power is growing at a very rapid rate. Within 10 years, they will dominate, the Western Oceans, and many of our allies that are over there are going to have to get more friendly with them and kind of let us go, because they're going to be afraid of their massive military might that we are not going to be able to counter.
Yeah.
So what do you guys at SOS Liberty think about that?
Yeah. Countries such as North Korea, obviously, their third missile launch failed attempts, congratulations, are just trying to show what kind of power they have, and they're trying to become more intimidating with us and trying to push us out. And things such as Russia, they just want to grow again, and they're trying to show that with military dominance. And although it's not showing itself now, it's peeking its head around, and it's going to get worse as time goes on, such as Japan, who has the economic dominance, but doesn't have the military power. It still seeks our help. It will grow over time, and although some of these countries may seem to be our allies, they will become more powerful and more intimidating over time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. What kind of solutions do you guys at SOS Liberty have for this kind of pulling back of military power / letting these other more powerful countries get away with this?
Well, I do think that the military influence is something that is very, very scary and threatening to the United States hegemony. However, the thing that's scaring me is the stockpile that we're building up of trillions of trillions of units large, and that's of United States Treasury bonds. The fact that they're building up and buying up a lot of our debt, that means that they're going to have a lot of socioeconomic influence on us in the years to come. And we have seen historically that when countries have threatened to dump our bonds, that they've been able to coerce us at the international level into doing things that, you know, normally might not be in the United States' interest. And I think that I believe that I reflect the views of the other people on the executive board at SOS Liberty, that the only way that we can really maintain our hegemony and ultimately our sovereignty is if we make sure that we maintain our economic independence along with our military independence.
Yeah. Well, I would absolutely agree with you. So I'll tell you, let's do this. Let's say that you kids at SOS Liberty, we clean out the House and the Senate, and we elect one of you as president as well, so you control everything now. What are some specific steps you would do to reduce our national debt?
First off, I would propose a balanced budget amendment if our president, day one of the presidency. This is something that has gone on for far too long, and I also know that that's something that Ross Perot ran on back in the 90s, and that's also why he was able to capitalize a lot of the third party vote. And because of how much support it got at the national level, it forced the Clinton administration to balance a budget. However, they didn't go far enough as to pass a balanced budget amendment. We are long overdue. We need to, first off, before we do anything else, is to pass this balanced budget amendment. Another thing that we need to do is we need to reform a lot of our entitlement programs. We need to reform Medicaid. We need to reform Medicare. We need to reform Social Security. But the thing that I would do specifically would be to privatize Social Security. If you look at Social Security in terms of an investor paradigm, when you look at the annual total return of the amount of money that you put into Social Security as opposed to the money that you get out from it, you get a lower return than 30-year Treasury bonds historically. So if we can instead make it a collective fund that everyone has to be putting their money into, that's effectively just acting as a fund for, you know, Congress to be borrowing money to pay for other programs with, give it to the individuals to manage. Give it so that they can, you know, invest in stocks and equities, so that they can invest in mutual funds, so that they can buy bonds, treasury bills, and they can invest in whatever they want. And that will also lead to trillions of dollars being reinvested back into the economy. And it will probably lead to the biggest boom that our country has ever seen.
And also, this is Kelly again. I feel like this is a really good time to talk about the capital gains tax that was in the news for a little while ago. And what most of my generation doesn't understand is for most people, it's a third tax after the sales tax, after your home income tax, after everything. And the fact is, there's been stats taken that even if you take every cent earned by the upper 1%, it won't even cover a fraction of our debt. So what we need to do is expand the tax bracket rather than just tax the hell out of the upper income bracket.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. It's something to consider now. I wanted to ask this a little bit earlier, but number one, who pays corporate taxes? I know that sounds kind of silly. Well, the corporations do. But I know one of you is an entrepreneur. You just, whatever your corporate tax rate is, you pass that on to your clients. So this is the sneaky, sneaky way of getting the middle class to pay higher taxes by having a corporate tax rate. I personally believe there shouldn't be any corporate taxes, period, because corporations don't pay them. The people pay them. And, you know, so that leads to the next question, fair tax. What do you guys feel about the fair tax?
Yes, I don't have too many opinions on
this. Okay, I don't want to get you out of your comfort zone, but we're essentially talking about a consumption tax. And the way a consumption tax works is if you don't consume a lot, you don't pay much. And if you're rich and you consume a lot, then you pay a lot, unless you decide not to consume a lot. But it ends up being a lot fairer, and there's a lot of complications to it in terms of how you actually administer it, et cetera. I mean, some people tell you it's pretty simple, but overall the concept is the next step beyond a flat tax. And I think that ultimately would solve all of our problems.
So wait, Tom, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to get a grasp on this. This is a tax that as you gain more money, you have more profit, then you'll pay the higher tax, right? They're taxing for the rich and the less for the middle class?
No. A consumption tax is this. You don't pay any income tax. Income tax is abolished. The whole tax code is gone. When you go to the store, you pay a national sales tax, essentially. Now, we don't want this added onto income tax as well. It's just that's it. That's the only tax. So if you're rich and you want to go buy a yacht, well, you're going to pay some taxes on that. If you're a middle-class family and you say, well, we're not going to go on a vacation this year and we're not going to buy that big flat panel TV, will save up and buy it next year, that's when you end up paying your taxes. You could have a year where you end up ultimately really not paying any taxes at all. And so the idea is that you only pay what you want to pay. You have a choice in deciding how much you pay, and that's based on how much you consume. And if you're wealthy and you can afford to buy lots of stuff, then you'll pay a national sales tax that will go to the national government, and a portion of that also goes to the states. But that's how you generate tax revenue. And all of the models that are out there that look at what you would pay. Now, here's the beauty of it. If you like Craigslist and eBay and stuff like that, you don't really end up paying. You can probably just use stuff all over the place and never go to the store and buy anything other than going to buy food and a few other things. But you end up saving a lot more money if you want to be frugal. But if you're wealthy or you're, you know, upper middle class, et cetera, then, you know, you pay, but only when you want to pay based on your consumption.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
I'll tell you what, go look it up. Go look the Fair Tax up and study it a little bit, and it's very popular among the Tea Partiers, and there are variations of it, and there's pluses and minuses, but it's a very interesting concept, to say the least, that solves our unbelievably bloated tax code that is not fair anyway, and I believe that a progressive tax rate is immoral, absolutely immoral. So at best, we need to go to some kind of a flat tax rate, but a consumption tax does help. Much more than even a flat tax. So that's something to consider, but I just throw that out there. Tell us one more time where people can connect with you in social media and why they should.
Sure thing. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SOS Liberty. You can tweet us at Liberty SOS. We would appreciate a shout-out from you if you could do that. I can also find some very hysterical videos on YouTube at youtube.com/TheSOSLiberty. Or you can check out our website at www.sosliberty.com. We have links to all those other aforementioned sites there. You can also check out our blog that's linked on our sosliberty.com website. And, yeah, any way you can get in contact with us, you listeners out there have kids that you don't want to get involved, have us have them shoot us an email, have them contact us on Facebook. You know, we would absolutely love to get them involved and on the radio and speaking with us. You know, we got a lot to do as we're becoming a national movement. I don't know if Charlie mentioned we're going on Fox and Friends again this Saturday morning. So tune in and check that out. But there's a lot to do, and we need all the help we can get.
There are tons of ways to connect with us, and ultimately, you just got to do it for the children. You have to do it for the kids. You have to think about, you know, the youth and our future and our kids' future and their kids' future. Do it for the children. Connect with us so that we can take care of the generations of tomorrow.
And I just want to add a quick disclaimer here. Some of the things that were mentioned on this show reflect our personal opinions and not necessarily the opinions of SOS Liberty as an organization. Our lawyer told us to say that. No, just kidding.
Okay. Yeah, you always got to have those lawyers backing you up, keeping you safe. Now, if somebody wanted to start a local chapter somewhere else in the country, are you guys outfitted to help them do that?
Absolutely. You can actually check out our website, SOSLiberty.com. On the top menu bar, there's actually an option to start a chapter. So all you got to do is fill out some basic information. Charlie or I will get in contact with you rather quickly. Charlie is notorious for getting back to you within 5 to 10 minutes of sending him an email. So I encourage you to test that skill of his. But yeah, you can start up a chapter. We'll send you anything you need to do. We'll send you anything you need. We got some PowerPoints, some various presentations. And anything you need, we'll hook you up here in our headquarters in Northern Illinois.
Well, that is awesome. I tell you what, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to anyway. We have somebody well known that said if they had a son, he'd look like a hoodie, druggy thug. But I think most Americans would like to have sons and daughters that look and act and are as responsible and as smart as you kids are. So, man, I'm really impressed with you kids and how much you know. It is going way beyond anything that I expected. I'm really impressed here. So we're going to do what we can to help you out. And so with that said, thanks. You can stay on with us if you want. Paula's going to do her tribute to our fallen heroes here as we wrap up the show. But SOS Liberty, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Good luck. We'll be in touch, and we'll do what we can to help you promote your cause.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
All right. You guys have a good night, too. Good night. Voila. Man, that was awesome. And thanks for having Jacob come on. That was awesome, too. Appreciate
it. It was very nice talking to you. I learned a lot.
Yeah. So, well, Paula, if you want to take us out, as you usually do, we love that segment. It's sad that we have to do it, but we do it because we want to pay tribute and honor our fallen heroes, as well as those that are fighting for us now and are still with us, and we appreciate all of their sacrifices.
That's true. And continuing our series, Honoring the Fallen, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have claimed the lives of more than 450 Americans, bringing the U.S. death toll to more than 6,300 since 2001. Five names that I'll be reading from the list are Clark A. Corley, Jr., 35, Joshua Daniel Corral, 19, Kenneth A. Corzine, 23, Robert Brian Cowdrey, 39, and Adam Daniel Craig, 23. From militarytimes.com, Marine Lance Corporal Kenneth A. Corzine, who lost his life on December the 24th, 2010, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. He was 23 years old from Bethalto, Illinois, and he was assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, 1st Marine Division, Marine Expeditionary Force, Camp Pendleton, California. He died December 24, 2010, from wounds sustained on December the 5th while conducting combat operations in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Yeah, that's about it for that one. I apologize. I'm going to give a shout-out to the troops serving overseas in Afghanistan, specifically the Army. Your families love and miss you dearly. We pray for you. We keep you in our hearts and in our minds, and we want you home safe real soon.
All right, Paula, thank you so much. As always, our hats off. We salute our troops, and more of them are coming back. Thank goodness. Praise the Lord. And we love you all. Paula, it's been a pleasure as always. This was a great show. I know there are a lot of people out there listening from some of the Patriot groups that follow the show, and I know we're going to get a lot of downloads. We always get a lot of downloads, and I'm going to keep promoting this show because I know of some really great groups out there that I see some kids coming along with their parents. And this would be an awesome opportunity for them to do what their parents are doing in order to move this country forward and take it back and bring us back to a constitutional republic, one that honors and follows the Constitution, which all of our troops have sworn an allegiance to support and defend, as well as bear true faith and allegiance to that Constitution, and they do. And so with that said, we'll be back next week. I believe we're going to be doing a show on either Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll get that up on Facebook and the website. But we'll be doing one show next week. And that's all I've got. Anything else, Paula?
Oh, that's it, Tom. Thank you very much. That was an awesome show. We've got to get the more of the youth involved with what it is that we're promoting.
Yeah. And with there are kids out there that are just as smart, maybe smarter than us on this stuff, because they're so energetic, and it's so fantastic to hear that. So, in any case, all right, good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us in the American Hour with Paula Zahn and Commander Tom Garcia.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.